Viewed in our publications and book chapters as well. He's won several local and international grants together with other researchers. And among them is the grant that covers or the grant to conduct an impact evaluation study on Ghana's national health insurance, on which he serves as the PI. Again, he serves as the PI for the project that is on an impact evaluation study that assesses prenatal care by village women in the context of traditional cultural beliefs that pose barriers to accessing modern prenatal health care. So, judging by the short narrative I've given on his background, I think that he is the best person to actually give us a talk on leadership, looking at the positions he's served and is currently serving. He is no other person than Professor Aaron Asibi Abuosi. Can we please welcome him with a clap?
Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I want to express my gratitude to the faculty members in charge of the seminar series for doing me the honor of inviting me to come, and then we have a discussion on leadership. And it's a very nice opportunity to be here. When I came and I said it was like I'm in heaven. And Dr. Millicent said it's the Ghanaian version of heaven. You have a very beautiful environment, and I didn't make a mistake in choosing to come in person rather than doing it online. So I want to also express my gratitude to you. And thanks for your introduction, Dr. Millicent. Okay, so we can start. Okay, so leadership in public health. And by the way, even though from my profile, you haven't seen that I've publications and so on is on leadership, but that is my foundation because I'm in a management school. It's part and parcel. Leadership and management is the foundation of everything that we do. But my publications is relates more to what she has mentioned. But I also give a lot of talks on leadership to the Ministry of Affairs and Ghana Health Service and many other people. And of course, I also practice, having worked, as you said, in the health sector, in management and leadership position for several years before joining academia. Okay, so so my understanding is that there are others online. Okay. So it means if they want to ask questions or contribution, it can come up. Okay. All right. So this is going to be my presentation outline. We'll look at leadership, management, and governance. These are three concepts that always go together. Then we will now have an overview of leadership styles and application in the health sector. And we'll zero in on transformational leadership, which arguably is the most recommended leadership type. But it has its strengths and its weaknesses. Okay. We'll be discussing that within the context of public health, and that is where I would expect us to make it a discussion. Okay. We'll try to apply it to the Ghana health sector. And again, it's going to be discussions among ourselves, what we consider to be the leadership and management challenges of Ghana's health sector. Or if you have any other health sector, maybe in developing countries or sub-Saharan Africa, you are free to add, and how best they could be improved. Okay, and then we'll have a conclusion. Now, even though we are saying that public health leadership is leadership, the principles are the same. Feel free, even in homes we have leadership, isn't it? In communities we have leadership. So the principles apply. So I want it to be in the form of discussion, and we all share ideas and learn from one another. Is it not? Oh, I'm not pressing the right one. I'm supposed to press this arrow, so it's not responding. Okay. Or I should rather point it this way. But you can operate from there for me. So just move to the next slide. You can move to the next slide. Okay. Now, I want to start with the WHO health systems building blocks, which I'm sure some of you are familiar with. Okay. According to the World Health Organization, there are 6 building blocks of every health system, which means that these building blocks are important for the proper functioning of any health system. So if you see problems with any health system and challenges, it has something to do with some or one or more of the 6 building blocks, and they include leadership and governance as number one, which is our concern today. Then health financing, then health workforce, that is human resource for health, medical products, technologies and vaccines, information and research, and service delivery. These are the 6 building blocks of every health system. Right? And WHO is saying that if you want to achieve the goals of health systems, which include improvement in health, and that improvement should be in the form of improved levels of health and then equitable access to healthcare, where both the rich and the poor have access to healthcare, and all kinds of, no matter your background, okay? So that is equity. So improved health is the ultimate goal of health systems. And it's the same thing with global health, right? Improved health of the country. And the health system must be responsive, okay? And then there must be financial risk protection so that people are not vulnerable when they need healthcare and they cannot afford healthcare. So any country that is able to make provide financial protection for its citizens, it means that they are able to access healthcare when they need it, according to need and not according to ability to pay. And of course, there must be improved efficiency. Okay, efficiency has to do with doing much with little and not setting elephant traps to catch rabbits. So that's what efficiency is about. These are the goals of every health system. To be able to attain these goals, WHO says that These 6 building blocks are very critical. And it will improve if there is access and quality service, right? Quality care, quality of care or quality of service, and people have access to it, and you get the 6 building blocks right, you will be able to attain the goals of the health system. All right. So you will see that you are talking of a very important building block. That's what we are talking about today. And that is the background. That's the context from which I'm going to start. That leadership and government governance is key to be able to attain health systems goal. Whether we are talking about public health or we are talking about, the curative health, preventive care, and so on. All right. Okay, next slide. Next slide. Okay. Now, from the WHO framework, you will see that we are talking about leadership and governance, but management is implied. So, because leadership and management are twin concepts that always go together. All right. So we have leadership. So if you like, you can say leadership, management, and governance. So when we say leadership and governance, management is part of it. All right. So, so just a quick point about governance. Health governance involves setting strategic direction and objectives, making policies, laws, rules, regulations, or decisions, and raising and deploying resources to accomplish the strategic goals and objectives, and overseeing and making sure that the strategic goals and objectives are accomplished. So that's what health governance is all about. So if you want to look at it in the context of Ghana, it is about what are the strategic goals of the health sector in Ghana? Who are the people who are making those goals? The policies, the laws, the rules, the regulations, whether we are talking about health insurance or we are talking about prevention of COVID or whatever. There are certain rules that are made, certain policies that are made, and so on. And how are the arrangements that are put in place to make sure that, you know, the health sector is well governed. So if you see the governance structure of Ghana health sector, it varies from other health sectors. So we have a Ministry of Health, which is responsible for policy. Then we have the Ghana Health Service, which is statutorily mandated for implementation of the policies. Okay. Then you have other agencies like the private sector, the faith-based sector, and traditional medicine. That's how it is structured, right? And then look at the Ghana Health Sector, the Ghana Health Service, they've divided regional directorates, okay? And then you also have the public health division, right? And they are responsible for governance issues as far as the health sector is concerned. So you have public health directorate, then you have the regional health directorate, and within each region, you have institutional care division, you have directorate for health administration and support services, you have directorate for public health, and so on at the regional level, okay? And it is at the headquarters of Ghana Health Service. Then when it gets to the local level, you have the district health directorate, okay? And all these areas, they are supposed to have a kind of boards, all right? So at the regional health directorate, of the Ghana SF has a regional health management team. Then when you go to the district health directorate, You have the district health management teams, right? And then they select various, people that have a voice and are knowledgeable about health issues into these boards. These are governance issues, right? These are governance issues. To what extent are these arrangements able to work well? It's a different matter altogether. Because if you want to look at the Ghana Health Service and the way it is structured from the headquarters to the service delivery points and the DHMT system, the regional RHMT system, and so on. And the Ghana Health Service also has a council, Ghana Health Service Council, okay? Then you will see that it doesn't seem to work the way it is working, because the boards are not operating like a typical boards that we have for corporate organizations, where they meet every quarter. And then there are certain rules, there are certain targets and strategies that the chief executive officer, who is on the board and also on management and ensuring management, will be able to report. And then they will look at it and see where they are deviating and so on. It doesn't seem to work like that. And you will see that you have Ghana Health Service Council, then you have the other director, regional health management teams and so on. Then you go there and you want to find out how often do they meet. And it is something else, okay? You go to DHMT, how is their constitution? So it is just there are structures, but they don't seem to work. It is an issue relating to governance, okay? Then I was with the church health system, the Presbyterian health system. I was a general manager. Then you see that they are running it like a corporate system. So as a general manager, there was the area board. And the area board was chaired by I was in the eastern region, the Kwau area, Kwau Presbytery. So I was based in Dongkokrom as a general manager. And we had the presbytery chairperson, who was the chair of the board. Then they select people with legal background, finance background, retired doctors, and so on, and put them there, chiefs, and so on, and they are on the board. So then they have a 3-year strategic plan, broken down to annual plans every year. And the general manager will have to make sure that he gets the views of the people and then the stakeholders, and then they look at the needs of the health system of the area. And then they will come up with those strategies. And others in the Ashanti, Akim, and Agogo, some from the northern sector, then we all converge in Accra and we have a common strategic plan. Then when we come back, then we have annual plans, and then we meet the board quarterly to report to the board based on the annual plans and so on. So those are governance issues, all right? So the summary of it is that when we talk of certain strategic direction and objectives, it can be the Ghana health sector, and then how it is divided into the ministry responsible for policy making, then the agencies, the major agency being the Ghana Health Service, followed by other agencies like Christian Health Association of Ghana, and then private sector providers and so on. And the way they have some of the policies that they have put in place to be able to let the system go on. Then we want to also look beyond just the Ministry of Health and its agencies to the government and every government and the policies it has for health. So you see the policies for health insurance, certain policies for emergency response, and you see how when COVID broke out and the way they were able to set committees, and some of them, even the president was a chair some of the committees that responded to COVID, and they adopted this all of government, all of society approach, you know, where they involve other sectors of the country, you know. So you see Ministry for Communication talking about always the Minister for Communication was always giving announcements, updates about what is going on, even though it's, and the Health Minister was at the background, you know, that is it. And then police were involved, military were involved, and so on. So those relate to governance issues, okay? So that will be enough for governance. Then we'll come to next slide. Yes, so he said leadership, management, and governance. All right. So what is management? Now, the popular, go back to the slide. The popular definition of management was by one management scientist called Mary Packard Follett. And she said, management is the art of getting work done through others. The art of working, getting work done through others. That's the simplest definition for management. And other definitions include management as a process consists of achieving organizational goals through planning, organizing, directing, and controlling human and physical resources. So this is the functional definition of management where they've broken down, they've defined management and added its functions, which include planning, organizing, directing, and so on. Okay, let's go. Now, it's important to know the levels of management. And as I said, management and leadership are twins. You can't talk about one without the other. In fact, we'll come to ask questions whether you can be a manager without being a leader, or you can be a leader without being a manager. And I will expect you to respond to that. Now, management is also divided into levels. So you have top level, middle level, and then that operational level. Okay, the top level managers are at the strategic level. Okay, so when I was in the room there, Dr. Millicent was showing me the board of directors, where I saw Professor Badu Akosa there and some other key people there. All right, so the board of directors are often cited as an example of top-level management, and then the CEO of an organization is part of the top-level management. So they are at the strategic level. So they are not involved in the day-to-day running of the organization, but they provide direction, set strategic direction for the organization. Okay, so we have District Director of Health Services. I presented this to the health administrators of the whole country, the directors, the deputy directors, regional at the regional levels. Okay, so I use some of these examples, but we can look at it as I already mentioned. The Ghana Health Service, you have the top level, the Director General of the Ghana Health Service, and so on. Now, when we talk of strategic level, it's not necessarily fixated to board of directors, but it's about those who provide the strategies, the goals, the broad areas. Okay, so that is at the top level, strategic level. So when you come to this school, who are the people who decide the next step? I was asking Dr. Millicent, said you are focused on public health for now. Initially, the name was called Ensign, College of Public Health. Now, you have now decided to say what? Ensign Global College. There is reasoning behind that. So it means your thinking is that you want to go beyond public health. So it means this strategic thinking. Okay? You are thinking that with time, you involve other things. But for now, you are focusing on public health. So this is relating to strategy. So the people responsible for this strategic thinking, that's what we are talking about, top level managers. Then you have the middle managers known as the tactical level. Okay, so they manage and coordinate the work of several units. Okay, several units. So that's at the tactical level. So I don't know how to fit it in. I don't know your organizational structure here. If it is a typical hospital, so you will see that a typical hospital, you have a health administrator, you have a nurse in charge, a GDN nurse, you have the pharmacist, and so on. They are all what? Various, you know, the GDN nurse is coordinating the units. You have the ward, various wards, children's ward, surgical ward, you know, female ward, male ward, and so on. So they coordinate, those are units, okay? So if you have several units and the person who is coordinating the several units, the health administrator is responsible for, say, the transport, making sure the transport systems are working, procurement processes, getting the human resources, the laborers, and so on, everything, all the support services, right, is provided, maintenance, and so on. So these are different units. When you go to hospital, you have estate department, you have the transport department, and so on. They are all coordinated by the health administrator. So any unit, I mean, anybody who is managing several units together is at the tactical level of management or middle level management. Okay. Then you have the first line managers. That's at the operational level. Okay. So ward in charges. I'm using a hospital, for example. I'm sure we are all familiar. So you have the, if you go to every ward, there is somebody who is the leader of the ward. They call them ward in charges. Okay. So they manage a particular unit. So that's at the front line. Those who provide direct service. Okay. So that's what we mean by first line. Now, let's go on. Next slide. Management. We need to spend a little time to understand. They are linked. Right. Management. You also need certain skills in management. Corresponding to the three levels of management. So we need conceptual skills. Right? So that is the mental ability to analyze and diagnose different situations. Okay. So conceptual skills. And you are saying that, okay, we are doing public health now. What else can we beyond public health? Then you think around. You do some scanning, environmental scanning. You look at your competitors and you look at what is happening. Then you think about, so if we were to add this particular program, oh no, if we add, it may not take off because all over the place. Oh no, if we do this and we put it this way, you are thinking. Conceptually, using a situational analysis, and then so the sitting down and thinking of what next, what can you do, and then you now translate that concept into an idea or something that can be implemented. This is at the conceptual level, and it corresponds with what there's. Top management or the strategic level management. And there's a caveat. Even though we say conceptual management requires conceptual skills and corresponds with strategic level, it doesn't necessarily restrict to them. It means that if you want to bring a change, it must start with your conception of it, thinking about it. Whether you are at a strategic level or not, whether you are at home or not, you know, you need to think first. And before you can dream about what you can do about a situation. So that's conceptual skills. So a manager needs conceptual skills, and then the manager needs human skills, or some call human relation skill, the ability to work with, understand, motivate, and lead other people. Then technical skills. So the human relation skills also generally relates to the middle-level management or the tactical level, as we read, because he or she is coordinating different units. So because you are coordinating different units, you are, you know, dealing with people of different temperaments, doing different things. So you need human relation skills to be able to coordinate so many units with different characters together. So that's why it is related to the tactical or middle level. But it doesn't end there. It then means that every manager needs some amount of all the three skills, okay? But it's the focus is that if you are at the strategic level, you need more of conceptual skills. If you are at the tactical level or middle level, you need more of human relation skills or human skills. And then when you are at the operational level, the front line, you need technical skills. That is the ability to apply specialized knowledge or expertise. So you are a manager, you don't need to know the how to do anything to make things succeed, provided you have conceptual skills and think well, and you don't even know how to do something. You don't need technical skills to be a good manager. But if you have good conceptual skills and human skills, then you can get people who have the technical skills, and they are needed at the front line to be able to make things go on. So this is also important to understand. Now let's go to the next slide. Okay, now I want to merge leadership and management. Okay, leadership and management often go together. To be an effective leader, the manager must influence his associates in a positive way to reach the goals of the organization. Okay, and leading is more about the future. So on top of leadership, it is more about the future, the ability to inspire and motivate people to achieve organizational goals and provide a vision for the organization. It's a leadership role. So having a vision, the ability to inspire people, the ability to motivate people to be able to attain organizational goals. That's leadership. And it is more, leadership is more about future, what you can do, all right? Now, the question that I want to ask you is whether we can have managers who are not leaders, or we can have leaders who are not managers. Can we have those people who are managers, but they are not leaders? Questions, anybody can answer, either from here or online. In other words, do we have to have leadership and management skills? Or you can have management skills without leadership skills, or vice versa? Any attempt? Yes. Okay.
A manager should be somebody who has all the skills that you've listed,
yes,
including the human skills,
yes,
as well.
Yes.
And so it could happen that, yes, this individual will be able to think, will come up with strategies as to what they are leading the institution to do.
Yes.
But they might not have the human touch to it. In that case, they are missing an element,
okay,
of what defines them as managers.
As managers. Good response. Yes. What did you want to say?
Okay, I just wanted to say that we can have a manager who
who is not a leader.
Okay.
So my understanding of a leader is he's also doing the work.
Yes.
But people are following him.
Yes.
And a manager is making the people work okay. for him.
Yes. Beautiful. Yes. That's a good distinction. Any other? Any other? Okay. Now, it's possible, I agree, it's possible to have people who are good managers, but not, they are not good leaders. It's also possible to have people who are good leaders, but they are not good managers. What we want is those who are both what? Good managers and good leaders. And we'll come to that. Okay. Now, next slide. Now, let's see those who are leaders who are not managers. Okay. So, if you lead without managing, although you might be able to create a surge of energy about a future vision, you are unlikely to be able to organize and implement to make things happen, right? This is similar to being in charge of a space program and looking wistfully at the moon without making coherent plans, organizing the needed training and equipment for the astronauts and tracking progress towards the moonshot. So that is it. Leadership is about vision. A leader can even think that one day we'll be in the moon. That's a good vision. And we have leaders like Osagyefo, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, who are globally hailed as people who lived beyond their time, you know, and decided to think far ahead of their time, and they started putting things in place. So, assuming that Dr. Kwame Nkrumah wanted to say that one day we will have United States of Africa. And then he didn't go and build Job 600. And so we are told that Job 600, where the parliamentarians are now using, was built with the anticipation that one day Ghana will become the headquarters of Africa. The United States of Africa. And so that is why he started putting those heavy infrastructure, you know, like Job 600, which is still very solid, you know, like the Timber Motorway, and so on and so forth. So if all the inspirational speeches by Dr. Kwame Nkrumah was just mere words without some form of action, then he was only a leader and he was not a manager. Meaning that, you know, yes, the independence of Ghana is meaningless until it's linked up with the total liberation of the African continent. What did he do beyond those statements? That is moving from leadership to management. He put measures in place. Okay? So the ability to plan beyond vision, to organize beyond vision, makes you a leader who is also a manager. So the building of Job 600, people even say he married from Egypt as part of just the African part of his vision. To say that Africa is one, you know, and so many other things, visiting other African states and inspiring them and so on and so forth. He had a vision, but he also back that vision with concrete steps. That is management. Management is about how do I manage, you know? How do I put things in place? How do I plan? How do I organize to make sure that my vision is translated into what? Concrete reality. So otherwise, it's just like saying that you want to go to the moon. But you are sitting down. You know you can't use your wings to fly to the moon. You need to build an astronaut. What does it take to build a spaceship? What does it take to train astronauts? That is a management duty. So how you now begin to organize things, plan how you, when you are going to start building your spaceship, when you are going to start training your astronauts and all those things, that is the function of management, planning organizing, and so on. That is management function. It's not a leadership function. But the concept, the idea, the vision must start with leadership. Okay? And so, the next slide. Managing without leadership. We also say that there are people who can manage, but they cannot lead. Okay? This is like being on a treadmill. You may engage in a lot of activity and spend a great deal of energy, but it will get you nowhere. Okay? I think we all know what that treadmill is, eh? Okay, so those who can afford and they don't want to go outside and be jogging and so on, they can buy a treadmill and put it in their room, and then the thing will be rolling and you'll be there like this. Yes. And sweating. But are you moving? You are not moving anywhere, but you are sweating. Okay, every day the same thing. Every day the same thing. Every day the same thing. No new thing is added. Nothing new is added. You are just managing to make sure that what you know is working well. But you don't sit down to think, so what else should I do? That is a manager who is not your leader. It takes leadership to create a vision that, look, we are doing public health. Yes, we started as public health. Okay. What prevents us from adding other programs? Maybe something related to the quality of care, where I am. You understand? So let's add that aspect. And what does it take to add it? Oh, so are they doing other places? What is unique about it? How important and relevant it is? And so on. So when you think that, okay, so if we are to add that, then if we maintain the name Ensign Public Health, College of Public Health, it will be misleading because nobody will associate anything with it, you know, except public health. So it will be, people will guess as soon as they hear public health and they are not interested in public health, their mind will not come there. Meanwhile, you are doing some other things. So that thereby, let's change it to Ensign College, Global College. That's right. So Ensign Global College. Then you are now free to add other things into it. Okay? But if you kept doing the same thing, public health, you are, all what you are thinking is every year you advertise, people come, then the same faculty, and you are teaching them the same courses, even you don't review the courses, the same thing. And you are so good in teaching them. New trends are emerging, and you are still stuck to what you know. You know, that is management. Management is making sure that, you know, there are two keywords about management. You say management, effective managers and efficient managers. So effective managers are managers who make sure that they do things according to plan, achieve the results, set targets and achieve them. So you are always setting targets and you are achieving the target, and it's okay, fine, you are effective. Right, then efficient managers are those who are able to achieve much with little. Okay, that's very economical. So when you end up being both an effective and efficient manager on the same things always, then you are a manager but not a leader. It can apply anywhere, whether at home, in the community, and so on. So it takes vision and leadership to say that this is where we are as a community. This is where we are as a health sector. And I've been saying that the health sector in Ghana, I'm talking about leadership in public health, we are in a ticking time bomb in Ghana as far as non-communicable diseases is concerned. We are still fixated with curative care, malaria, typhoid fever, and so on. And when you look at the global burden of disease statistics, the malaria and all the infectious diseases are dropping drastically in line with what we call the epidemiological transition, the transition from infectious diseases to non-infectious diseases. So it's dropping drastically, but the NCDs is rising seriously. Within the past decade, if you look at the incidence of diabetes, you will be scared. And this is because of increasing urbanization, sedentary lifestyles, and the nature of the diet, that we now eat high residue, low residue diet, okay, low residue diet, and so on. Lack of physical activity. So people now can afford motorbikes, trotters, and so on, rather than walking. And bicycles, roads are constructed with our bicycle lanes for people to ride, as we see happen in the advanced countries. And because owning a car is a status symbol, you don't want, and when I was doing my master's and was riding bicycle from Okpongolo to the University of Ghana campus, my colleagues told me that if they don't have the money to enter car, he will only walk. He would rather walk than to ride a bicycle. To him, it was condescending for a master's to MBA student to be riding bicycle. Their mindset. So when you see that, what is the health sector doing? What are the public health experts doing? Go and check the global burden of diseases and see what is happening to Ghana. Is it time for us to begin a conversation about now trying to look at preventive health care more seriously, include it in National Health Insurance Authority, so that prevention is cheaper than cure? Okay, and I heard about one doctor who already started something on cervical cancer. Some simple technology that they are able to suspect the incidence of cervical cancer, and then they forward it to the experts. Then they quickly diagnose it, and then they begin. They give drug that can easily, cure it before it progress to become full blown cervical cancer, which is very difficult to treat, and the prognosis is poor. And I hear that the National Health Insurance Authority at some point became interested in that, and they said they will link up and see whether it can come under the National Health Insurance. And when they mentioned the cost, very, very, very small. That is what we should begin to do. That's what government, when we talk about governance and so on, should begin to talk about making roads with lanes, encouraging people to ride bicycles and so on, and maybe providing cheap sources of getting bicycles and so on for people to exercise. And then the food. A former minister of state, Kare Kwashiga, I hail him a lot because I think he went to Israel and adopted their system, the regenerative health concept. And it was catching up, but he died. And he died with his vision. I remember one doctor said that this reproductive regenerative nonsense. A doctor made a passing comment like that, a doctor friend of mine. So to them, where are all these weird ideas coming from? But the reality is that we are on a ticking time bomb as far as non-communicable diseases are concerned. So we are saying that it will take leadership, whether at the national level, Ministry of Health level, government level, to move from being fixated on what? Curative care, to what? Preventive or public health care. And that is the challenge for you as a public health school, to really do serious studies into it and make so much noise, because you have the authority to do it, and it will be heard than any other school that is not a public health school. All right? So that's the assignment I'm giving you. Now, so let's go on. Yes, so this is what we want. We don't want leaders who are not what? Managers. Otherwise, you will just be like dreaming to go to the moon with our total measures in place to build the spaceships and train astronauts. We don't also want managers who are not leaders. That is doing what you know very well, but that is always what you are known for. You don't think outside the box. There's no innovation, but what you know, you are doing it very well. And then people will think, bring more innovations, and then they are progressing because they sit down to think about the future and the trajectory of the future. They will do analysis, like I'm saying, and then see that, look, the trend, the epidemiological transition is actually real in Ghana. The malaria statistics are dropping. Typhoid is dropping, and so on. And then diabetes is rising. Hypertension is rising. Stroke cases are rising. What is the implication for the future? What can we do to make a case for government to get involved? Then you are leading. That is where you are moving from management to leadership, okay? And so this framework is a link between leadership, management, and governance, as we already said. And we are talking about managers who are also leaders. So leading and management. So a leader is somebody who stands, focus, align, mobilize, and inspire. Manager is somebody who plans, organize, implement, monitor, and evaluate. And we are saying that we need this. You are calling me to talk about leadership, but I'm proposing to you that I want you to be leaders who also manage, and not just leaders. And the corruption issues and so on. How you do it? And then in the end, you see that there will be two health system performance, whether in the form of what? Public health or curative health and so on. There will be equity, access, quality, efficiency, and sustainability. So that is the framework that I'm proposing. Leaders who manage and how you can attain the health system goal. Okay? Now let's go on. Next. Okay. Since you have invited me for leadership, I will zero in on the leadership. And therefore, I wanted to look at, we have an overview of what? Leadership styles and application in various sectors. Okay? Now, a leadership style is a leader's style of providing direction, implementing plans, and motivating people. All right? Now, let me go back and I'll ask you. Go front. I want to come and ask you. I want you to talk. I want us to look at the video leadership style. Okay. I see that. Is that the beginning? Okay, so now. No. I want you to go. I want to take a quick glance at the various leadership styles. Okay. Is this where it's starting? Okay, so I'm sure you have all heard about autocratic or authoritarian leaders. Okay, we'll explain them, but I want to see how your general understanding of the various leadership styles are and who you want to prefer before we go into details. Now, autocratic or authoritarian leadership, some they are used interchangeably. What's the next type? Participative or democratic leadership. Go on. Laissez-faire or free-reign leadership. Paternalistic leadership. Transactional leadership, okay? Then transformational leadership. That's the ultimate. Now, let's go back and start. Now, I've mentioned the various leadership types. Which ones can you remember? And which one do you prefer? Let me hear from you. Which one do you remember? Which one do you prefer? Yes. It, yeah, transactional, transformational, and then what?
Laissez-faire.
Yes, so please. What do you prefer?
I prefer the transformational.
You prefer what?
The transformational.
The transformational one. Yes. Okay, good. That's the ultimate. We'll talk more about that. Any other? I want everybody to talk. I want to hear your voices. Because the way this environment is, it affects people's voices. Even myself, when I came, I even seen that my own voice has changed. Okay. Any other? Which leadership style do you like?
Laissez-faire.
Okay, who is that?
I'm online.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear the online people. Oh, good. Oh, okay. And you like laissez-faire. So remember, when I come
yes,
out...
Yes, I want the...
Yes, I will start giving the characteristics of each of the style. And I will ask those who choose to see whether they still choose it or they don't choose it and why, okay? But that shouldn't stop anybody from choosing, because I will come and ask you. Now let me listen again. Democratic or participative? You prefer that one? Okay. And you too? You prefer that one, democratic and participative? You have to tell me why when we come to it. Any other? You also want the democratic? Nobody wants to go autocratic. Oh, is that so? You can contribute to ideas. So it's not needed at all. It is. Okay, why?
In certain circumstances, you need to be autocratic.
Okay.
Especially when the decision-making process is a complex one.
Yes.
And you know the people involved are so many that
yes.
you cannot take everybody's
yes.
Contribution.
Yes.
So you need to man up and make that decision.
Let's give her a round of applause. You have to come and do management and leadership and come back here if you are not a faculty and come back here and make a case for the introduction of leadership training, and that is what I was looking for. So there's no leadership style which is bad in itself. Some are better than the others, but none of them should be thrown away, because there is a situation that will arise that needs that type of leadership style. And that she has hit the nail right on the head. Okay, now let's look at it. So leadership style is a different situation call for different leadership styles. In an emergency, when there is little time to converge on an agreement, an autocratic leadership style may be most effective. So when there is an emergency, that's not the time for you to now say, oh, I want to be participative. I want to be democratic. And then when you are to be participative and democratic, you are saying that you want divergent views. Somebody will say this, somebody will say the opposite. You have to find a way of reconciling and making sure you build consensus and agree on what will be the most appropriate one. And that demands what? You can't solve that within a day. It will mean you have to go and sleep over it. Think about it, think, research more, and come back. So participating comes at a cost. Democratic style of leadership comes at a cost. It's best, the best, but it has its own limitations, okay? We'll come to that. And so in an emergency situation, when something must be done, the most appropriate leadership strategy is autocratic, authoritarian leadership. However, in a highly motivated, let me just put this thing off. Put it on silence. In a highly motivated team with a homogeneous level of expertise, a more democratic or laissez-faire style may be more effective. In a highly motivated team, the people are already highly motivated. So you are talking about academic environment. These are experts in their own right. Are you understanding me? So you are all experts. And so you can come and exercise autocracy on anybody. You see, that is where laissez-faire is a so that people will think outside the box, and feel good for doing things, making things move. And if there is a need for consensus, you come together and use the participatory approach. Okay? Where to write, I'm just using myself as a where to write some organization call for us to submit a proposal, and other organizations also submit a proposal for them to introduce a program in the business school. And some of us were experts. They constituted a team, put some of us as experts, and then one of them to lead as the chair. So the chair just requested for our CVs. We gave our CVs. Before we realized, he has used his own way and just sent the proposal. So some of us just wrote and said, count us out. You think that you alone knows. But others also know. Listen to others. What do you think you have? And he just listed a number of areas that we write the proposal about. And some of us, some were good, some of us had reservations, and we could have offered other alternatives and so on. So some of us wrote and said, count us out. Because you think you know all and your word should be final. You know, so you need to come together even if you know so well, because you are dealing with other experts who are also authorities in the area. So you need to come together and build consensus. You convince them and then move on. So you don't use this kind of approach. So you see that it nearly backfired until some of the bosses prevailed and then said, well, it's one of those things, and I'm sure the person involved will learn his lesson. That is what we are talking about. Now, let's go on. Now, we are going to look at each of the... No, go back. There's something, there was some last thing. We said that the style adopted should be the one that most effectively achieves the objectives of the group, while balancing the interests of its individual members. All right? Okay, now let's go to autocratic leader. Under autocratic leadership style, all decision-making powers are centralized in the leader, as with dictators. Okay? Which examples can we remember, even if it is not in the health sector? Anybody? Mm-hmm. Dictators, whether in political circles or academic circles or whatever. I'm sure some people are having certain people in mind, but they are afraid to mention. Okay. So the basic thing about autocratic leader is that their decision-making powers are centralized in the leader. He has the power to make the decision. Autocratic leaders do not entertain any suggestions or initiative from subordinates. It permits quick decision-making. That's the advantage of it. As only one person decides for the whole group and keeps each decision to him or herself until he or she feels it needs to be shared with the rest of the group. That is the characteristic of an autocratic leader. Let's go to the next one. The democratic one, or the participative one. Democratic leadership style consists of the leader sharing the decision-making abilities with group members by promoting the interests of the group members and by practicing social equality. This has also been called shared leadership, as another name for it. Research has found that this leadership style is one of the most effective and creates higher productivity, better contribution from group members, and increased group morale. However, in situations where roles are unclear or time is of essence, democratic leadership can lead to communication failures and uncompleted projects. Okay? And democratic leadership works best in situations where group members are skilled and eager to share their knowledge. So that is when it is more, when the people are skilled. So you don't follow them with a skill and be instructing them. They all know. They have something to share. So that is the time that you apply democratic leadership. Okay. It is also it's also important to have plenty of time to allow people to contribute, develop a plan, and then vote on the best course of action. So that is the participatory or democratic leadership, shared leadership. Okay. Now let's go on. Laissez-faire. Laissez-faire or free rein leadership, decision making is passed on to the subordinates. The subordinates are given complete right and power to make decisions, to establish goals, and work out the problems or hurdles. So I just said, oh, you feel free. Whatever you will do to let the work be done, you do it. I'm giving you the power to do it. Don't be afraid. You do it. That's laissez-faire. He's not responsible for anything. If it goes well or it doesn't go well, that's laissez-faire. Now, this is an effective style to use when followers are highly skilled, experienced, and educated. Okay? Followers have pride in their work and the drive to do it successfully or on their own. Followers are experts. See, in situations where followers have more knowledge than even the group leader. And followers are trustworthy and experienced. We use laissez-faire leadership. Again, here, the academic environment here. Laissez-faire. You have asked somebody to be a leader of a particular department. That is the area the person has the expertise. You, the one who is the overall boss, you don't even have expertise in that area. You don't go and you try to micromanage the person. We have people like that in my university. And morale is low. The faculty members are folding their hands and look at the dean. The dean has department heads, and she decides if there's a program, and you have to select faculty members to go outside for capacity building. She just, without even involving the head of department, decide to choose who should go. The number of students that should be admitted. The heads of department are not involved before they realize so many students have been admitted, and yet you, the one who is the dean, cannot teach all of them. You don't even have the knowledge to teach. And just because you have the power and ultimate decision resides in your hand, you don't do that. So laissez-faire attitude and leadership is needed when there is so much expertise. So all what you need to do is just say that, look, you are in charge of this. You are in charge. You are an expert in that area even more than me. I expect results. And then you see it going. So laissez-faire, the one who chose laissez-faire, I'm sure, knows why she chose laissez-faire.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But people always, when we talk of laissez-faire leadership, they think that somebody who is not serious, you are not alive to your work. So you are laissez-faire. You don't want to take responsibility. That's why you are giving people, you are pushing your responsibility to people. But the thing is, depending on the circumstance, you have to adopt laissez-faire leadership style.
When yes. People...
Good. Okay. Now let's go. Paternalistic leadership or paternalism. This way, the way a paternalistic leader works is by acting as a parental figure, by taking care of their subordinates as a parent would. So it happens a lot in the health sector. So where some of the nurses are calling the matron, ma, uh-huh. So that's paternalism. So once you identify the person as a mother, it means that the person must behave like a mother with all her strengths and her weaknesses. And once he's a parent, you have to obey. Because children are supposed to what? Obey. So that is the thing about paternalistic. So in this style of leadership, the leader demonstrates complete concern for his followers or workers. In return, he receives the complete trust and loyalty of his people. So when I use his, I also imply here. So workers under this style of leader are expected to become totally committed to what the leader believes and will not strive off and work independently. Not only do they treat each other like family inside the workforce, but outside the workforce too. That's paternalistic. So it's just like a family type of thing. Oh, we are a family. We are a family. So once you have the father, the rest are children, some brothers and sisters. Is that not it? So you each see each other as brothers and sisters with parents, and you it is like a family kind of thing, all right? Now, these workers are able to go to each other with any problems they have regarding something. One of the downsides to a paternalistic leader is that the leader could start to play favorites in decision making. It happens in families. How parents can make sure that they are very fair to every children and don't discriminate and favor some children than others is a balancing game, is that not it? But that is what will happen when it's translated to an organization. So you see if you don't balance it well, and everybody say ma, you don't take care, you favor some, and then others will not. And because there is total commitment, and they cannot protest, because it will be like protesting against your parent, then it can bring problems. Okay. Now, this leader would include the workers more apt to follow and start to exclude the ones who were less loyal. So anybody who seems to be a deviant, doesn't want to fall in line for everything the leader is saying, will be an oddball, and you will not be treated favorably. And because the rest, everybody sees him or her as the mother or father, she will continue to receive support, and you will be a loner. You the one who don't want to be loyal. So you are forced to what? Continue to fall in line. Okay. Now, this leadership style is often found in Russia, Africa, and the Pacific Society. We are citing Africa as an example of a place where we have paternalistic leaders. Is it true? Is it the case? So it's true. We bring the family life pattern back into work. So if you want to behave like a European, and you want to look at things very objectively, and you want to criticize your boss very well, they will look at your age. You understand? You don't talk to your listen like that. You know, it's just like he's an age older than you. He can give birth to you. So you don't talk like that. So age is brought inside. Fatherhood or motherhood is brought inside to bear on your ideas. So sometimes you put away the objectivity and look at the age, look at the fact that, you know, that kind of thing. So Africa is an example. All right, let's go on. Transactional leadership. Transactional leadership is a style of leadership in which leaders promote compliance by followers through both rewards and punishments. Uh-huh. Through a rewards and punishment system, transactional leaders are able to keep followers motivated for a short time. Okay, so do this so that they will do the work. They will do it. Then when you stop to do it, they are motivated. There's no incentive for them to continue to do their work. Or this person has done something wrong. So you want to, you know, pull the ears to serve as a deterrent for others not to do it. Okay? So you do that, and then, so it has problems. They use both rewards and punishment to make sure that people follow. But the motivation is for a short time. Unlike transformational leaders, those using the transactional approach are not looking to change the future. They look to keep things the same. Okay, so transactions. They just want results. See, they just want results. Whatever they will do to achieve results. Like we're talking about a manager who doesn't lead. See, so they don't. Transactional leaders, as the name suggests, is transaction. Let the work go on. You know, motivate people to work. Punish those who don't work, and so on and so forth. Just work. So it doesn't bring innovation. Okay. They look to keep things the same. Leaders using transactional leadership as a model pay attention to followers' work in order to find faults and deviations. Okay, now let's go to the ultimate transformational leadership. What is it? Transformational leadership is a theory of leadership where a leader works with teams to identify needed change, creating a vision to guide the change through inspiration, and executing the change in tandem with committed members of the group. That is the characteristic of a transformational leader. This is the leader that management and leadership is combined in that same person. The model that I'm proposing for you. Because he's able to work. He works with teams to identify the needed change. Even if he identifies it alone, he wants to make sure that he will involve others so that it will be a team thing. Then he creates a vision. Remember that the word vision is associated with leadership. To guide the change through inspiration. He inspires them, all right? Then, and execute the change in tandem with committed members of the group. Okay? Transformational leaders are described to hold positive expectations for followers, believing that they can do their best. So they are always, they don't want anybody to look down on himself or herself. If you are thinking that you are deficient or you are not capable, they will inspire you to say there's something in you. You can contribute to the progress of this organization. They will try to bring out the best in people. So they don't, hold positive, they always hold positive expectations for followers, believing that they can do their best. As a result, they inspire, empower, and stimulate followers to exceed normal levels of performance. Transformational leaders also focus on and care about followers and their personal needs and development. So they go beyond just the work to try and then engage, to know what are the concerns. The people have their own problems. They have their own challenges. And they know that if you are not interested to know what is affecting the individuals, and you are just interested in how you will achieve organizational goal, something is hidden in some individual that will be a barrier that you never know. But if you are able to go beyond that to identify some of the personal concerns, what worries people, what are their needs, and so on, then you are able to look at it within the context. So how will this have a positive or negative effect on the vision that I'm having? And how can I get around that? So they try to see how they can even contribute to addressing the personal needs and concerns of their followers, so that they'll be able to achieve their goals. Let's go to the next slide. And so there are four components of transformational leadership that will help us to remember very well how transformational leaders are. And these are known as the four I's. First I is idealized influence, inspirational motivation. Let me go to the other ones. Individualized consideration and intellectual stimulation. These are the four things of a transformational leader. Let's go back and start. Idealized influence, what is it? The leader serves as an ideal role model for followers. The leader walks the talk and is admired for this. That is what we mean by idealized influence. You yourself, you want to influence others. You must be the model of influence yourself. You must walk the talk. So the leader doesn't tell you to do something and he himself or herself doesn't do it. So if you want to influence others, be seen to be doing what you want them to do. That is what this first characteristic is about. Then the next one, they say that a transformational leader embodies the qualities that he or she wants in his or her team. In this case, the followers see the leader as a model to emulate. For the followers, it is easy to believe and trust in the transformational leader. Then, inspirational motivation. The transformational leaders have the ability to inspire and motivate followers through having a vision and presenting that vision. Okay, so that is what I mean by inspirational motivation. People are inspired. We can do it. Look, this is what can happen. Then you motivate the people. We will face challenges, but the challenges are only going to be temporary. And there's no any endeavor without challenges. But I can assure you that there is a need for this. And if we do it and we all put our shoulders to the wheel, we will make it. So they inspire you. They motivate you. So that is inspirational motivation. It's a characteristic of a transformational leader. And combine these two. These two are combined, okay? It takes combined these first two, that is idealized influence and inspirational motivation, are what constitute a transformational leader's charisma. So when they say a leader with charisma, these are the two things that you will see in a charismatic leader. Somebody who has an idealized influence, using himself as a role model, walking the talk, okay? Like they always say about our former president, J.J. Rollins, that he's a charismatic leader. He will walk the talk. If he wants people to clean, he will go to the gutters himself. Is that not it? Yes. So that is it. Then he will inspire you, okay? That's inspirational leadership. So the two things constitute the charisma of a leader. Let's go to the last two. Individualized consideration. Transformational leaders demonstrate genuine concern for the needs and feelings of followers and help them self-actualize. I've already explained that. They will help you to self-actualize, to bring out the best in you. So they are interested. That's what we call individualized consideration. So they try to know the needs of everybody. They spend time on it, on individuals. You know, so if you have family issues that you care to talk about their concern. If you have a problem, they are there. You know, funerals, birthdays, and so on. They spend time on individuals. You know, wishing you happy anniversaries, wedding, happy weddings, you know, and all that. That is what individualized consideration. It's a characteristic of a transformational leader. This personal attention to each follower assists in developing trust among the organization members and their authority figures. For example, the transformational leader can point out the problems of a member working in the group. From this perspective, the leader can work towards training and developing a follower who is having difficulties in a job. Then, the last attribute is intellectual stimulation. The leader challenges followers to be innovative and creative. They encourage their followers to challenge the status quo. That is intellectual stimulation. They will even try to identify the training needs of their members. So what do you think, which area do you think you can train if you want to, you need further training on? Or they can identify something. I can see this characteristic in you. It seems your strength is in this area. Do you think you need further training on it? You know, and you can do it. So they will stimulate you and they will tell you to challenge the status quo. That you are not doing the same thing every day. Try and be innovative. Bring some new ideas. I'm open to it. If you think you can do it better in a certain way, I'm open to it. You can bring it out. That is what I mean by intellectual stimulation, right? And I've applied it a lot. When I was a manager in the hospital and I tried to empower those who are often taken for granted, like the security heads and the laborers heads and so on. So I try to tell them that, look, if anybody, laborer runs to me with a problem, thinking that because I'm the ogre of the hospital, I will just solve the problem there and call the boss and query. I say, look, go and report to your boss. So they felt very valued. And when there's an issue, then I'll call you. So this is an issue that I'm seeing related to your work. So how best do you think we can solve this problem? You will be surprised the ideas that they will bring. And because they know that you always want to listen to their views. You know, they will try to impress you. They will try to bring some suggestions. And somebody came to thank me, followed the husband to come and thank me. That she too, that I always want to listen to her ideas. And I work some ideas, suggestions that she brought, and I work with it. I use it as a policy for the hospital and work with it. And she was so happy that she too. That is it. Because I know that there is something in that person. And it's just that the difference is just that the training or the qualification is not up to me. It doesn't mean he doesn't have ideas. Okay? So that is what happens. So intellectual stimulation, making people to know that you can do, you can go and to do training in ABC areas. A common misunderstanding is that transformational leaders are soft, but the truth is that they constantly challenge followers to higher levels of performance. I have had that problem. So when you are asking people for their ideas about them, they think it's as if you don't know what to do. That's why you are always what? Asking people. But you can know and still keep it. And then welcome ideas. And you'll be surprised that people will bring superior ideas than what you think you know. And if they bring their ideas and you also bring their ideas, so what do you think about this? Then they see that yours is actually superior, they will agree with you. If they think you can do yours better, they can modify yours to be better. They will say, it's good, but why don't you rather do it this way? It will rather be, then you see you are enriching yourself. Okay, so let's go to the next. So we have advantages, general advantages, and disadvantages of transformational leaders. Transformational leaders create change, then manages it effectively. There are fewer turnover costs each year. The transformational leaders are unafraid of the fast decision. So they are not afraid that because they want to involve people and inspire people and so on and so forth, you know, and it's delayed. They are not afraid, okay? It is a leadership style which looks at each worker as a person. There is an emphasis placed on continued education because of the fact, the last one, intellectual stimulation, you know. They reduce communication issues in the workplace because everybody is valued. Your ideas are valued. You are contributing. So nobody will go behind and then try and be complaining, all right? This leadership style eliminates issues that cause low morale. They understand relationships better. Transformational leaders create immediate trust within the workplace. Now let's go to the disadvantages. The influence can backfire. you think that you want to involve everybody, stimulate people, and so it can backfire. It can result in wrong decisions. It can lead to employee burnout. Assumptions of the motivation that we are thinking that if you motivate people, they will do their best, it can backfire. You motivate, you do all the involved people, and nothing seems to be going. It can happen. Prioritization, tendency for preferential treatment is also there. It's possible. Then challenges in details, overlooking the reality. Sometimes when you want things to go fast, you will say you want to be a transformational leader. You want to do idealized influence and all those things. No, it looks like, especially in emergency, right? Unidirectional influence. It's like the transformational leader is the one who is influencing everybody. It's from him to others. It's unidirectional. And it's not always effective. Not that, it's not all the time that is effective, even though it is the idea. Let's go to the... Okay. So, let me go to the next slide and I'll see whether there's something left. Well, I think that's all. That's all my slides. Well, so this now discussion time. I think I'm done with the lecture. What I wanted to discuss is what do you think? Identify at least 5 transformational leaders you know, past or present in Ghana or elsewhere, either in government policies, in the health sector or inner sector. In what ways do these share the characteristics of transformational leadership that we have spoken about, whether it is about what? Inspirational motivation, or it's about idealized influence, or it's about what? What are the rest? intellectual stimulation and the rest. So in what way do these share the characteristics of transformational leadership? Okay, now the caveat is that the discussion should be professional, dispassionate, and nonpartisan. So it should not be like when you are doing your, because you are NDC, you don't want to say anything about NDC. You want to rather say something about ABB or vice versa. We just want to learn an intellectual environment. So let's see examples. I want you to talk. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Any setting, just to demonstrate to me that you have understood the characteristics of transformational leaders, which is the ideal that we want, compared with the rest. Mm-hmm. Come again. Yeah, there was a question initially. Okay. Okay.
May I please know whether it is advisable to call your boss Ma or Dad at the workplace?
Oh, yeah. It's a good question. I think it's not bad. It just shows respect, and we know we are in Ghana. That thing is there. Whether it is work site or outside, we have it. That respect for elders, respect is there. Just that, as we identify the disadvantage of it, if because you resign yourself to a daughter or a son, and you can't question your mother when she's going wrong, that is where the balancing act, the difficulty comes in. But I think that you should be able to say that I will give you the respect, I will consider you like a mother. But I still think that when we are at work site, our goal is about the work. So, and there are also sayings in our traditional setup. And this, there is a, this in my, among my people, there is a saying which is a, how would you call it? It's a profane. I don't like to use that word. You're saying that if there is truth in your mother's private part and you use your thing to remove the truth out, you have not committed incest. Have you understood the saying? Huh? She has understood it. You are not understanding it. Huh? There is truth. That means the truth is so, you get it. Truth is so sacrosanct. Truth is so important that even if it is hidden in your mother's private part and use your thing to bring it out, you have not committed incest. You have not, the incest they call it spoil. You have not spoiled her. I don't know if you understand. You are not supposed to use your thing into your mother's private part, are you? But you can only do that when truth is in your mother's private part. If you have to choose between the lie that is everywhere and the truth that is in your mother's private part, difficult as it is to bring the truth out, do it using your thing to bring it out. You have not committed incest. For the sake of truth, you have not committed incest for using your thing to bring the truth out from your mother's private part. Is that understood? Uh-huh. So it then means that we can agree that it works like the paternalistic system can go on. But when the need to bring out the truth comes, we should be bold to bring out the truth. Because at the end of the day, it is the achievement of the organizational goal which is more important than the interpersonal relationship. Okay, good. Any other? Okay, so back to the question. Anybody want to dare to contribute something? The transformational leadership. Can we get examples? Mm-hmm. Sure. Yes. Yes.
This individual, I got to meet him in the school I was teaching.
Yes.
As the then Minister of Education.
Yes.
He came to the school.
Yes.
At a very odd hour when school hours was done, because there were some little issues that were boiling up in the school and he needs to just swing by.
Yeah.
But then when he met the staff, it's all about inspiring people
right.
to be able to address the problem. It doesn't need to call for a whole minister of education
no.
to come to the institution to address problems for you.
Good.
But all he was there is to inspire. Says,
yes.
This is something you can do.
Yes.
And next time, I would love to come to your school, but not to come solve problems.
That's right.
And to me, I think he was a transformational leader.
Yes.
Trying to use.
So he's exhibiting what? Individualized consideration.
Yeah. Wonderful. So that's an individual that I have in mind.
That's right. So you know that you have what it takes to address the problem. You have great minds in this institution. Yeah, if you bring them together and dialogue, you should be able to find solutions to your problem without any recourse to a higher authority. I know that there are great minds in this, and you can even identify one or two people like this is there. People are there, they can do. I mean, I'm sure why you are there, why is the problem? Then they will not tell you, we are not consulted. But if they are consulted, they will offer their ideas. Thank you so much for your contribution. Any contribution, whatever you want to contribute about transformational leadership. Yes, Doc. Yes.
Even in his speeches,
yes,
you could see the inspiration and the motivations that would come out.
Yes.
Known for the famous phrase, yes, I can.
Yes.
Trying to motivate individuals whenever he steps on every platform. To try to empower people to bring out the best in them. So I think he's also a classical example.
Catch word. Yes, we can. And when he came to Ghana, that was it. Yes, we can. Do you understand? That falls under where? Which of the eyes? Inspirational motivation. Yes, we can. He said, yes, we can. And he said, look, Africa doesn't need great what? Whatever, but great institutions, something like that. They don't need great, is it a great resources or great something, great, like they expected that donors and your, but they need great institutions. So if you put the institutions in place to deal with corruptions and so put the proper systems in place, accountability and so on, that the problems of Africa will be solved. He talks in general terms like that as a leader, and not necessarily getting into the nitty-gritty transactional issues. But he inspires people. Yes, we can. Even though he knows that there are a lot of problems. But as a leader, he inspires. Thank you so much, Doc. And I'm going to add that somewhere in my slide in case I'm invited next time to go and talk somewhere. I will use Barack Obama to illustrate transformational leadership. Beautiful. Yes. You collected the mic. While the mic is in your hand, you must talk. Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, I'm sure we can cite examples about him. Nelson Mandela, you know, the political leaders, you know. When South Africa, apartheid, and when he came out and people were thinking that we were going to revenge, and then he said, no, it's not like that. It's not it at all. And he is respected as the greatest leader. They say, you haven't put certain measures in place. Said, it takes time. That's one of the problems of inspirational leadership. And he was loved by both the whites and the blacks for his forgiving attitudes and so on. And he will visit Africa. When he goes to Europe or the Americas and so on, you see the crowds, you know, because of his charisma. Okay, yes, any other? Yes.
I want to just say this. It's not anywhere, but I say this in this institution. There's this lecturer that is lecturing you and you realize that you are even confused, yet he's saying that it's easy and that you can do it. and I'm talking about
yes.
a lecturer that's taught us
yes.
biostatistics.
Yes.
Hanover. And he's saying that the thing you are confused. He's introducing the subject. You know you are confused, but he said you can do it. And at the end, I think we're able to.
So you don't write yourself off.
Sure.
It will help you to go and say, the lecturer say I can do it. If others can do, I can also do it. Yes, Doc. Then you will also try to see how he will also work hard. Yes, Doc.
I think this is a very good follow-up. This is one from Situfe. And then she says that I have one transformational leader in Ensign who inspired us to move on when the journey was tough.
That's
and
right.
We were losing hope at the beginning of the semester, especially in biostatistics.
Aha! Oh, wow. Her fingers are pointing towards this direction. Thanks for being an inspirational leader in Ensign. That is it. And that is what, that is the joy of lecturing. So when your students give you that positive feedback, you know, we are also inspired, isn't it? Yes. Any other contribution? Okay. So, let's go to the last slide. Yes. What are the challenges facing the health sector in Ghana? In what ways do you think transformational leadership could address some of these challenges? Maybe time is up. My time is up. But that is something to reflect on. I think I touched on it somehow about the leadership, you know. There was this popular saying by attributed to Professor Stephen Adey, that leadership is cause. Everything else is effect. Meaning that, look, and then the when I showed you the WHO health systems building blocks, the six of them, they say that they are also saying that leadership and governance is the connecting rope, okay, that binds the other building blocks together. So you have leadership and governance, health information, health financing, human resource for health, service delivery, okay? So, and then medical products and services, the six building blocks. Leadership and governance is what binds the other five building blocks together. If there's no leadership, forget about health financing. It will be in disarray. There's no leadership in governance and governance, forget about health information systems and so on. And the rest, and service delivery and so on. So we started by way of summary, trying to say that, you know, there are six building blocks for every health system, according to the World Health Organization, that whether it's public health or curative health or whatever, you know, these six building blocks are very important, and I've mentioned them. And that if there is leadership, which is among them, which is the core that binds all of them together, we try to understand management as something that is part of leadership. They are bedfellows. You can't talk about leadership and leave management out. And we try to distinguish between the two. We said leadership is about vision. It's about the future. It's about dreaming, about motivation, as we have seen. It's about inspiring people, right? But management is about planning, organizing, putting things in place, steps in place, you know, long-term plans, short-term plan, you know, operational plans, action plans, and so on. And so that is it. So if, and we are saying that you can be a leader and not a manager, and vice versa. But we want managers, leaders who are also what? Managers. They dream, but they put measures in place to achieve those dreams. Okay? And then we zeroed in on the various types of leadership. We talked about the autocratic leadership, the democratic leadership, the laissez-faire, transactional leaders, and then the transformational leaders. And we said that all of them have their advantages and disadvantages, depending on the situation. But the most preferred, the most recommended leadership style is the transformational leaders. And we said that it has four characteristics. If you forget anything about transformational leaders, go and remember the four characteristics of a transformational leader. That are the four I's: individualized influence, tell me, inspirational motivation. Okay. You're wonderful. And we've tried to explain them and try to look for examples, whether in politics or any setting at all, even in families. We can see, you know, the various traits come out. The paternalistic aspects are there. Even in families, some allow the transformational leadership system to work. Some are autocratic. Some are democratic. Some blend, depending on the situation. So on that note, I hope I met your expectations. And that is what I prepared to come and then deliver. And I'm once again very grateful to all of you for your attention and for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Boisi. I think that we have all learned a lot. The different types of leaders and which one is actually preferable. I think today's participation has been good. We can do better. So please inform others to join the next time. We have one more seminar series to do. That will be on abstract writing, and it's in the next 2 weeks. We'll have the virtual platform and then in person. Please do well to participate either ways. So on this note, we want to say thank you for coming. And then a very big thank you to Prof. Boisi for honoring our invitation and then coming to give us such an informative lecture. Thank you once again, and we hope to see you next 2 weeks. Oh,